It was really a jumbled mess from a writing standpoint. And I remember Donnie Most and I sitting there looking at
the set.
Donnie was really, he was really upset. He just said, oh man, look at what our
card game
kind of devolved into here. I mean, you know, it's not even, none of this is very funny and, you know, and
Thraben Inspector
jumping over a shark and we all thought it was a little ludicrous. And I kept saying, hey man, Donnie, we're a hit.
Card game.
Relax, you know, it's hard to have great
sets
one after another.
Thraben Inspector.
Jumping over a shark is going to be funny and great, you know, and it's, there, you know, Jaws had just been out a couple of years before and you know, and relax. And so, you know, Donnie had a clearer sense, I suppose, of sort of the direction that the sort of the quality of the
card game,
tone of the
card game
was taking after that episode. I remember thinking, you know, it, creatively this was not our greatest
set,
but I thought it was a pretty good stunt, and I understood why they wanted to do it. But the thing that has to be remembered about the jumping the shark idea is that
the game
went on to be such a massive success for, you know, years after that. So it's a kind of a fun expression, and I get a kick out of the fact that they identified that
Thraben Inspector,
because granted, you know, maybe it was pushing things a little too far, but I think a lot of good work was still done after that
set,
and audiences seemed to really respond to it forever.
And we're back for another episode of Lucky Paper Radio. My name is Andy. I'm here with my co-host, Anthony, still here, Maddox.
I'm here. I'm still here.
We're Hello. Back Hi. Talking about Murders at Karlov Manor, Murders at Karlov Manor Commander, and Ravnica Clue Edition. On this episode, we're going to be going over the cards that Anthony and I are interested in playing in our specific cubes. It's not about you, listeners. It's about us. It's about what we like for our own cubes and our own play preferences. We'll go over each of our cubes briefly and explain the premise of them, and then talk about the cards that we're testing and maybe the cards we aren't testing notably.
But a few episodes from now, it will be all about you, so please go fill out the surveys at luckypaper.co, click on links at the top of the screen, and tell us what you're interested in so that your voice can be heard in our community set perspective.
Your literal voice can be heard if you record a voice memo of your favorite hot take and send it to mail at luckypaper.co, and try and keep it as short as you can, because sometimes I gotta cut down the long ones, and I feel bad cutting stuff out, but we only got so much time. Just imagine thousands of people are gonna listen to it, so if you make it 1 minute longer, that's 1,000 more minutes, or 2,000 more minutes.
Don't do these big number things to me.
All right, I've got new cards for the Bun Magic Cube, and a couple new cards actually for the Degenerate Micro Cube. Unsurprisingly, none of these cards are going to make it into the Neoclassical Cube, which is 90% old border with rare exception. None of these cards are going to be those rare exceptions. What cubes you got to go over?
I just have four cards from regular cube, but I know you mentioned that you thought there were a lot of regular cubable cards here, so maybe you can talk me into a few others.
We're going to have a classic episode of Andy bullies Anthony into playing cards you didn't even think you liked in the first place.
And then I have six cards for the Turbo Cube.
Only six?
Only six. They are all bangers.
I'm surprised numbers are so small.
I was also...
The second number. I'm not surprised there's only four for the regular cube. I only have, to be honest, like three that are like... I'm actually like for the Bun Magic Cube. I have a couple like on the cusp I want to talk about, but really just three for the Bun Magic Cube. So I'm not surprised at it alone. I mean, our Bun Magic Cube and regular cube, we've been curating for a long time. We have a very good sense of what we like for those environments. And so it's rare to get a bunch of new cards for those environments because we have all of Magic's history to work from, and we're only adding another couple hundred cards on top of the 30,000 already available. So not likely they're going to break into the cube in high numbers.
There are dozens of cards that absolutely would just feel at home in the regular cube. It's just not very many that I'm like, ooh, this is unique and different enough that I really want to make changes, which is fine.
Okay, I propose we go Bun Magic, regular, Degenerate Micro Cube, Turbo.
Sounds good.
And on Turbo.
Just Everyone keep getting turbo. Faster and sillier.
Sure. So, the Bun Magic Cube. This is my primary cube. It is an eternal cube that plays cards from the full history of Magic and strives for very efficient, low-curving decks that play on Magic's fair axes. So there are no combos. There are no immediate ways to win the game on the spot. Everybody has to care about the tempo of the game, care about the state of the board, and play somewhere between aggro, mid-range, and control in some flavor. What I try and do is make it so those decks exist in some of their most committal and powerful forms across all of Magic's history. So when I'm looking at a new set, I'm really looking at just the upper crust of the most powerful cards, and I'm looking for ones that fit my play goals. I'm not just playing the most powerful cards. There's a lot of things that are really powerful that I won't play if I don't like how they interact with the game. I want to start out with two notable cards that I think are very popular amongst the Cube community. We'll see for sure when we look at the results of our survey, but that I am not playing. One we talked about on last week's episode, and that is Long Goodbye. This is one in a black for an instant. This spell can't be countered. Destroy target creature or planeswalker with mana value 3 or less. This is just a power crept version of Eliminate, which we got pretty recently within the past couple of years. I love Eliminate for my cube, and I am not at all interested in my removal spells not being able to be countered. So, yes, this is more powerful than Eliminate, but just like I just said, I'm not just putting the most powerful cards in here, and this one is not getting in because I want counter spells to function.
Great. We don't want hexproof on our creatures or our spells.
Absolutely.
Unless you do. But you don't.
I don't. The next notable one I'm not running may cause some people some grief. And that's Novice Inspector. This is a functional reprint of Thraben Inspector with slightly different types. It is a creature human detective. But, you know, one white mana for a 1/2, enter the battlefield, investigate. How much of the widespread adoration for Thraben Inspector that we have in the community? Oftentimes it feels like it's a meme. You know, J-Bro, Emma Partlow, these people just love Thraben Inspector so much. It's like this heavily beloved card.
It's like you can walk into a room full of cube players and say, always be Thraben, and have half of them just scream, always be Thraben back at you.
How much of that love do you think is somewhat ironic?
None?
Like, I feel like people love Thraben Inspector the way they love a pug. They're like, isn't it cute that he can't breathe and his windpipes all collapsed?
No. What are you talking about here?
Look, I play Thraben Inspector in my main cube. I like it well enough. I am definitely not looking for a second copy. I do break Singleton for lands, and I would be willing to break Singleton for spells, I think, but I've never come across one I want to break Singleton for. And I'm really down on this whole, like, functional duplicates that just happen to have different names. I avoid those at all costs, even among things like mana dorks and cantrips where there's a lot of similarity. I strive to find ones that are, like, meaningfully different. So I'm not interested in a functional duplicate card, and I'll be honest, Thraben Inspector does not excite me. Like, it's fine. It's utter filler, and I feel like people being really excited about it. Here's what I feel like it is. I feel like it's people that think it makes them seem smart and cool to like a little dinky card that's not that powerful. It's like showing that they're next level. Like,
wow.
Oh, everybody loves the, you know, Okos or the, you know, 5-mana, you know, huge angels that are super powerful. Not me. I'm not like the other girls. I like Thraben Inspector, which is just a 1-mana 1/2 that makes a clue token.
I think you're about to get a lot of mail.
I'm ready. I'm prepared.
I think maybe people really like it because it is something that's a little bit unique for the white aggressive decks, which there's also a reasonable argument to say it's not so unique if you put two of them in with different names.
Yeah, I mean, again, I like the card. I think it's fine. I think it's nice to have random bodies just laying around for the aggressive decks to crew vehicles or to put equipment on or, you know, put counters on from your Luminarch Aspirant or whatever. White is the color that can best make use of just, like, extra bodies that are otherwise unimpressive. And the fact that you can then recoup that card later when you want to, right? Like, I do think that, you know, an Elvish Visionary or whatever, like a Spirited Companion, I think is worse in the aggro decks because you're playing an undercosted body on turn two, because at that moment is when you have to pay for the extra card. Whereas with Thraben Inspector, you can keep curving out, and then only later on, when you have time, when you've gotten to the state of the game where card advantage is what matters, that's when you can cash in that clue and actually get another token. Plus, there's all this stuff we always talk about with these artifact tokens. We're sure it can, you know, be plus one artifact to your Talarian Academy or plus one artifact to, you know, animate and turn into a creature with some animating fairy or whatever.
Give you Metalcraft for your mono white aggressive artifact deck.
Sure. None of that actually matters in my cube for the most part. Like, having an extra game piece is pretty much irrelevant here. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a utterly uninteresting card, and I'm happy enough to run it because it fills a slot in my queue, but I don't want the second one, so go with God for all of you that do.
Yeah, I feel like there must have been a... I'm just in my making up stories about how cards get designed phase. I can see them making the mood board, or what are things that are related to inspectors and related to detective work that people love, and then how do we get all that through set design into the actual design finished set.
I mean, people are going crazy on Twitter about the reprint of Thraben Inspector.
Yeah, so I think they were right. Great job,
I know.
Wizards.
I'm saying people love it. I just don't get it. I feel like it's a somewhat ironic, like, trying to prove that you're interesting for liking a card that is not overtly interesting. It's like the hipster choice to like Thraben Inspector.
But you are a hipster.
See, in some ways I am, but I don't know.
Even, but it's too, even it's this not is hip like, anymore. Everybody likes it.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I'm with you
like,
that I'm
like
just...
My liking of Portent is what makes me a magic hipster, right? Like,
so you do have two different ponders. What if they made a functionally this identical Portent?
No, I would not
Novice
play that.
Portent.
I would never play that. And also, Portent is not identical. I Portent my opponents all the time, and I watch the soul leave their eyes. It's great. I love doing it.
Okay.
Anyway, Thraben Inspector, jump the shark. Ooh, that's the intro for this episode. I just figured it out. Great. I wonder, is the audio of that clip at all recognizable? We're going to find out. No, it's not. All right, then I have six cards that I'm on the cusp about. I'm going to kind of speed round these ones. I just want to acknowledge them and maybe mention why they're not going to make it, most likely because of something holding them back. The first is 10th District Hero. A lot of rules text on this one, but it's one and a white for a creature human. It's a 2/3. So fine on the baseline, right? That's the kind of base stats we get now on rares. Just one and a white 2/3, which is already good enough.
Ridiculous.
It has two activated abilities. One is Collect Evidence 2 to make it into a human detective with base power and toughness 4/4 and vigilance. And then one is for 2 and a white and Collect Evidence 4. If you've already done the first Collect Evidence, making it a detective, you can now make it legendary, give it power and toughness 5/5, and it also has the ability other creatures you control have indestructible. So this is essentially a Figure of Destiny style card. Not level up, because level up can only be done as a sorcery, but just a card that gets better and you can enhance by investing some resources into it. The mana investment is pretty low on this one, but you do have to have those cards in the graveyard to collect evidence adequately to continue to level it up. I like level up cards. I really like them at one mana especially, because they provide some additional depth to the one mana slot where you can kind of choose to play a game where you're going to invest resources into one big threat. Let's say, for example, you think your opponent has a board wipe but doesn't have or want to spend a single target removal spell on one threat. You could choose to just, you know, level it up. And the fact that this comes down a turn later and is a little slower makes that a little bit less appealing. Ultimately, it's essentially just, you know, beef. It's just a two-drop that can get really big, which I'm not opposed to, but maybe not as interesting as I'd like my two-drops to be these days. Next up, we have Deduce. This is essentially Think Twice, but with a token and a little cheaper. One in a blue for an instant, draw a card, and investigate. Investigate obviously gives you that clue you can pay two to sack later. Think Twice is one in a blue on the front, and then two in a blue to flash back for 5 mana total. And this is one in a blue on the front, and then just two generic, essentially, to flash back. And obviously, if you do have a cube that cares about those artifact matters things or having additional game piece, you've got that going for you. Again, I don't. Unlike Think Twice, you can't mill this over and get benefit from it out of the graveyard. If this was just Think Twice, but, you know, with flashback instead of investigate, I think I'd be pretty into it because I love the card Think Twice, but just on rate, it's not getting there in my cube. Given that this does make a token, I just don't think it's worth having another thing you have to go get out of the token box for essentially just a little bit plussed up Think Twice. So
yeah, I mean, I think that this is going to be there. A role player in a lot of cubes that really are interested in the, you know, divination with set mechanic.
This is a great card for a lot of cubes,
five,
I think.
Or 4 mana, draw 2 cards, but, you know, it's got the upside of being able to pay that whenever at your convenience in 2 installments, but also the big upside of doing artifact stuff that's going to matter to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
But your cube is just not one where that's going to really matter. And I think, yeah, the power level of your environment is such that even if just the raw rate of 4 mana draw 2 with that flexibility is not really going to be worth it. I mean, it is relevant that the front side is an instant, which we don't necessarily always see
and
on
the back
cards
side
that
too.
Are similar. Yeah.
That is how Think Twice works. It is an instant.
Yes.
And it would be
Think Twice, yes.
Utterly unplayable if
you
it wasn't
chose
that way.
The right card to compare this to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for Blood Magic, this would have to be like just a blue mana on the front side and then 2 to flashback, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's essentially divination in installments, and it would have to be an instant still. And then I think maybe it could get there in the Blood Magic cube. But as it is, I don't think it's going to quite make it. The next card, I think I really love what it would do to games, but aesthetically, I just can't get into the card, and that's Drag the Canal. This is blue-black for an instant. Create a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token. If a creature died this turn, gain 2 life, surveil 2, then investigate. I've been looking.
I do like Morbid as a mechanic, the thing that just cares about did a creature die.
Yeah, I really like this as a control card. I think it would work really well as a deck that wants to leave up mana, get to your opponent's end step, and, you know, maybe you just disfigure something and then spend your other 2 mana to drag the canal, and you get a ton of value if you do trigger Morbid on this. I mean, you're getting a 2-2 with Flash, and you're getting to draw a card with the Investigate, plus Surveil to gain 2 life. That's a ton of value for 2 mana, a really powerful card. What I don't love about this is this, like, off-color token making a blue and white detective token, which I get why it does that. You know, blue and white is kind of the color of detectives, but Drag the Canal is this morbid action, so it makes sense that it's blue-black. But aesthetically, it all comes together in this, like, pretty clunky way where it's a 2-mana card that makes 2 different tokens, one of which would be totally unique to this card and totally unique to my cube. I don't know if I'm willing to get over all of that to play the card. I'm not sure if it's going to be worth it to get there in my cube.
Is this guy the detective and this body is the clue?
I would assume so.
Okay, cool. Just trying to get the flavor from the picture here.
Yeah, we should see if there's a clue token in the set that is a dead body.
Oh, that's a great.
There might be. Next up is one I'm actually a little more interested in. If these are cards on the cusp, this one is right on the cusp of the cusp. And that's Tristani Three Whispers. This is 3 total mana, green, white, and hybrid green-white. So either green-green-white or white-white-green for a legendary creature Dryad, and it's a 4-4. And it has 3 activated abilities. For 1 and a green, you can give a creature Death Touch till end of turn. For a hybrid green-white, 1 mana, you can give a creature Vigilance till end of turn. And for 2 and a white, you can give a creature Double Strike until end of turn. This is maybe just enough beef to be good enough in the green-white mid-range decks. I usually prefer my things at 3 mana and above to also interact with the board in some way. I love things that have ETB fight or, you know, are disenchants or something. Just have some, like, back and forth with your opponent rather than just purely presenting a bunch of stats to deal with. But you can hit this off of Coco, which is something I always look for in especially green-white cards. The fact that this is only 3 mana as opposed to 4 means that you can hit it off Collected Company, which is really important for a cube like mine. Yeah, I think maybe just powerful enough to get there, and definitely you could do some interesting things with those activations if you chose to commit mana to them.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong in this particular environment, but what stands out to me here is the combination of Double Strike and Death Touch. I feel like you're not going to need to activate these abilities very often. You'll play this on turn 3, 2 turns later. If you can have 5 mana in play, you can kind of attack with impunity. And then if you are in a race situation, you have an opportunity to give your creatures vigilance. That does seem like a lot.
Yeah, the threat of activation on this is huge, right? Like, the Double Strike is going to be a nightmare for a control opponent who's trying to use their life total as a resource. The Vigilance is a huge nightmare for an aggro opponent where, you know, they're just trying to race you and you can afford to attack and block with your giant creatures. Death Touch, maybe not specifically matchup dependent, but, you know, just threat of activation makes almost anything hard to block if you have any mana up. And you
I mean,
have
specifically
Tristani
with the Double Strike, if you have the mana to be able to do both at once.
For sure. That's extra good, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how much fun this card will be, which is what has me on the fence about it, but I think it's probably good enough, and I'm a little bit thirsty for good 3 drops I can hit off of Collected Company that will give my cube a little more depth in the green-white section. Next up, Urgent Necropsy. Necropsy? Is that how you pronounce that?
I'm a little spooked to get that one wrong. It's got to be Necropsy,
It has
right?
to be Necropsy, right? I don't know what else it would be. This is 2 black-green, 4 mana total for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, collect Evidence X, where X is the total mana value of permanence that this spell targets. Destroy up to 1 target artifact, 1 target creature, 1 target enchantment, and up to 1 target planeswalker.
Okay, so this is one where we lied a little bit last week that this individual card, you do need to have stuff in the graveyard to make this work.
I mean, you could be targeting a creature token, and then you don't.
Absolutely. Great. That's what we meant.
There you go. So yeah, this is essentially, I think this is pretty much just a really good Golgari command, right? This reads very similarly to, like, Kolgan's command or something in that it has a bunch of modes. They're all destroy things, but it's destroying different types of permanents. And the potential to be a pretty often a 2-for-1, maybe sometimes a 3-for-1, and very, very rarely a 4-for-1, means this could be a very potent control card. The reason I'm not higher on this is because I already have a lot of Golgari cards, and I love a lot of them. I'm really high on Abrupt Decay. I really like Witherbloom Command, which is a card that I think will actually play kind of similar to this, just a much smaller scale. So this is kind of on my, like, maybe board for if in the future I decide I want there to be an even bigger, more powerful card advantage-generating answer in black-green that goes a little bigger than your Witherbloom commands, but the nature of my cube design philosophy is I always tend to prefer the cheaper versions of effects to the more expensive ones. Last card on the cusp. Really, this one's here because I think it is really elegant and a cool card that we could have gotten a while ago and we finally just got, and that's War Leader's Call. 1 red-white for an enchantment. Creatures you control get +1/+1, and whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, War Leader's Call deals 1 damage to each opponent. So basically a combination of Glorious Anthem and Impact Tremors on a little 3-mana card. I actually don't think this is probably very good in my cube. I have a ton of removal. The board states don't get that big, so having a card that relies on you having other creatures in play to do anything is probably a liability. But I look at it and I wish it was good enough for my red-white section, so I wasn't on, you know, just like Aneem Pakal, which is kind of just like another copy of Adeline, right? I'd like to have that diversity there. So if I can find some way to justify it, maybe I'll give it a shot. But realistically, I don't think it's going to get there.
Yeah, I think that is very specific to your cube, though. And in a lot of cubes that are fairly similar in terms of just the cards they contain, I think this is going to perform very differently and pretty powerfully.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it has the Impact Tremor staying stable to it means that it's still pretty good against removal, right?
Right.
Like, even if they are answering your threats, if you're pinging them along the way, that's something.
And it's tokens as well, so if you do have a Rabble Master, this starts to add up.
Yeah, it combines really nicely with Rabble Master or Adeline or Bitter Blossom or something. So, yeah, I don't know. It's also got really nice art. I love the art on it. It's just it's a nice card. I'm really into the card, and even though I don't think it's a great fit for my cube, I'm really tempted to give it a try anyway. All right, on to the three cards I actually like. First is Raucous Theater, which is just a stand-in for all of our new typed dual lands. We have a full cycle of dual lands with basic land types. So in this case, Swamp Mountain, they all tap for their two colors, obviously. They come into play tap because we're not in the business of printing cards that are strictly better than duels. But they also have the ability, when they enter the battlefield, surveil one. I don't know how to square this with the cycling duels, which I have been a huge champion of over the years. I don't know which of these is more powerful in my queue. I think it's really close, right? They play differently because if you have a free turn, you will almost always want to get your... what do we even call these cards? The surveil lands? Want to get your surveil land into play in that free turn where you don't need that extra mana as soon as possible, right? Because you don't want to draw it late if you need your mana. You just want to get it in play and get that surveil early on to help sculpt your early game and keep things going. So if you're a deck that doesn't have a turn one play, you're going to be fetching up your Raucous Theater or whatever every game if you can. Compare that to like a Fetid Pools or whatever, which I think you actually don't want to fetch up often because you want that to be a late draw that you can just cycle away, right? Like its ability is more valuable later on if you just need to cycle something away. Whereas if I draw Raucous Theater on turn seven, getting the surveil is nice, it's better than nothing, but at that point it's really close to just, you know, one of the temples, right? Because I didn't fetch it up, I just, you know, got it late. So they actually play pretty differently, but I think are of a similar-ish power level. Right now I'm on exactly three of the cycling duels. I'm on Irrigated Farmland and Fetid Pools, which are both for the control decks, and I'm on Sheltered Thicket because it plays nicely with the lands theme like Renin 6 and Titania that is present mostly in that color combination. So if I was to add one, it would probably be Raucous Theater, the black-red one, just because that is the color in my cube that has... It's the only color, actually, that only has three duels plus the fetches. Every other color has at least one more dual land, either in the form of a Bicycle land or a Horizon land or a Creature land. So maybe just to even things out, I play Raucous Theater for a little while, see how it feels. I would like it a lot in like a Grixis control deck or something to have the option to fetch up a surveil land. It's really going to help with things like Delve, right? Like if you fetch a land and then that land also puts another card in your graveyard, that's really compelling. It works really nicely with Delirium things, which I do have focused in red with the Dragon's Rage Channelers and the Unholy Heats of the World. So I'll probably give that exact one a try for a while, but I wouldn't be surprised if in the future I end up switching over, say, Fetid Pools to the blue-black one as well, or maybe running it alongside it, depending on where I land on these things. I did have the thought that if I was designing this cube from scratch now, I would be really tempted to try to not break Singleton on Shocklands, given that we are getting more and more type duels that you can actually play,
that's
right?
That's true.
If we had a full set of Bicycle lands, for example, it would be pretty interesting to have Shocklands, Bicycle lands, and Surveil lands all in the cube. It would make the mana base way slower than it is in the Bun Magic Cube currently, which is why I'm not going to like radically reimagine things that way, because the whole cube right now is designed around three shock lands, and I really love it that way. But given that we have so many more type dual lands now, I think it makes not breaking Singleton on fetchable duels much more viable for those that want to do it.
That's interesting. My immediate comparison was definitely just to the temples, because Surveil and Scry are similar. I like Surveil a lot more for fueling all kinds of graveyard stuff. It's hard to imagine in your cube, just because we're sort of familiar with the tempo of it, being excited to put any kind of tapped land that doesn't have the pretty substantial upside, like turning into a threat later, things like that, or the opportunity to cycle it late is pretty powerful as well. So I'm a little surprised to hear you make that comparison. But it is not untrue that if I have... a Hallowed Fountain and an Irrigated Farmland, sometimes I will just shock, or I will fetch for the Irrigated Farmland just because, you know, I can't use my mana, so it is a way to risk not drawing it later. which I feel like Sam Black would tell me I'm an idiot for thinking that way. But
I mean, he wouldn't be that rude about it. But Brian Koval did tell me that he thought that was almost always wrong on the video where I actually had him coach me.
You're never taking a turn off Mother of Runes to fetch your tap land, and you want your tap land in your deck, because not only is the point of a cycle land when you draw it late and you don't need it, it's a fresh card, but you have Timeless Dragon that can cycle for the irrigated farmland, which can cycle for a card, and you can get real 2 cards worth of value out of that line. I would be doing everything I can to leave irrigated farmland in my deck at this phase of the game.
That's good to know. That is something I do think about. I often find myself wondering, like, okay, here, let's say I don't need a untapped land on turn one, right? I have no one drop, but a similar hand. In that situation, you would always fetch the Hallowed Fountain. The cost being right that, obviously, Irrigated Farmland is good if you draw it later and you just want to cycle it for a card, or you can do the Timeless Dragon thing. The cost being that if you draw it later when you need another untapped land, you'd rather it be the Hallowed Fountain in that spot. But it sounds like you think leaning towards keeping the cycling lands in your deck tends to be the better heuristic.
Generally, yes, because a lot of the time when I'm playing Limited, I will draft some sort of tech land, whether it's in Cube or in a normal standard run Limited set.
Mm-hmm.
If my deck ends up with something like Colony Garden in it, am I using this 0/1 plant token for anything? And how often am I going to rip this land off the top and not play a spell on curve? Like, what am I getting out of my land entering the battlefield tapped? And in the case of Irrigated Farmland specifically, it is a dual land, which is nice. But is your mana in this deck so bad that you would play Coastal Tower? Or are you there playing this to cycle this card? Because I think if it was just Coastal Tower, or, you know, one of the Kaldheim snow variants, there's many ETB tap versions of this, even the ones that, like, the ETB tapped gain one life, I would probably just put an island or plains in the deck over that to make sure I'm getting my curve.
Yeah, I definitely...
A real card out of a land late is a real advantage. This is a skill that I port directly from Constructed. I play a lot of Modern where Triomes are part of your mana base.
Yeah.
And I get comments on my videos all the time where it's like, why didn't you fetch your Triome on turn one? You just had Scalding Tarn go. This is a great chance to get 3 colors. It's because Scalding Tarn is going to fetch Steam Vents, and then I'm going to fetch Overgrown Tomb, and I have all my colors anyway.
Yeah.
Why would I lose the ability to draw a card later in the game when I still have perfect mana?
Cool.
So, yeah.
That's great. That's good to know.
Right. But if I'm in that situation, you know, you actually don't get anything extra from fetching up your irrigated farmland and losing the opportunity to cycle in the future, but you do get that surveil, which is potentially a pretty big impact. So I don't know. It's I think something that I will enjoy playing with more than I will enjoy drafting in your cube specifically.
Yeah, I definitely get that superficially they resemble the temples more. The fact that they're fetchable, I think, completely changes their play patterns, because what sucks about the temples is that you just draw them whenever you draw them, and if it's a turn where you wanted an untapped land and now you have a temple, you're kind of screwed. I think if I were to put, you know, if you were to put one or two of these in the average deck in the Bun Magic Cube, the number of times it would be fetched up versus drawn would be like 3-1 or like 4-1.
Right, because you do fetch a shock land tapped sometimes.
Right.
And so if you just have the flexibility to, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to get the one that also gives me the surveil, absolutely you're doing that.
Right, and the fact that that means that you're... are much less likely to just draw this tapped land when you wanted an untapped duel or untapped source later in the game, makes you so much better than temples. And it's why I think they're similar to the Bicycle lands, because those you can also... I mean, I think there are still times, and I think Brian acknowledges too in the video, there are still times where it's correct to fetch it up, right? Like, if you have no other lands...
You don't think you're ever going to be cycling.
If you have no other lands in your hand and you have a, you know, curve out that's, you know, going up to 5 mana, like, it's really unlikely that you're going to cycle out Wayne even if you draw it, and you just don't want to draw it when you want to keep curving out. So there are times when it's correct to do it, but if you have extra lands in your hand, or, you know, you're looking for stuff to do, then obviously keeping that live cycling draw on your deck is very good. I think they're really powerful. I think they're, like, substantially more powerful than the temples. Not just is surveil better almost universally in pretty much every context, save for really fringe applications where you have, like, a combo deck where you specifically want to keep your combo pieces in it, but you don't want to draw them, right? Like, your Tinker deck might prefer a temple or whatever. But other than that, these are just, I think, a huge upgrade, and it's mostly the fact that they're fetchable.
Right, there are a fair number of cards that also just care about number of land types you control, so Domain is the obvious mechanic that just references that, but they're, I think especially in green, a lot of cards, Raphelos standing out as a card that cares about how many forests you have, so I don't know, if you're playing some kind of lower power environment where you still have Rafellos and you want more typed lower powered lands, that's definitely
I don't even think they're necessarily lower powered. Like, I kind of expect to see this cycle in the Magic Online Vintage Cube, and I think they'll be strong there.
Interesting. Okay.
They'll be right under, it'll be obviously Original Duels, Shocklands, and I think these will be the next highest picks, probably even over some of the better creature lands. All right, the next card I'm actually excited about, this is the one card with Disguise I'm considering, and it's Fugitive Codebreaker. One and a red for a 2/1 with Prowess and Haste. Hey, that's already pretty great.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about last week with some of these Disguise cards, where the front half is just kind of a card you want to play a lot, and the Disguise is a thing maybe you are more likely to do just all at once in a later turn.
Yeah, so I think this card is pretty fine on its front face. I mean, Prowess very much scales with the environment, and I have a ton of cheap cantrips and a ton of baubles and stuff to really do some hyper-Prowess shenanigans. I've also got free spells in the form of things like Mutagenic Growth and Gitaxian Probe, which, yeah, you can have a really explosive turn with Prowess Haste on a 2-drop. Then it also has Disguise for 5 and a red, and this cost is reduced by 1 generic mana for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. So you can play it face down as a 3-mana 2-2 with Ward 2, and then turn it face up later on for 6 mana, though in this case, usually much less. I would say usually, probably, hopefully, 1 red mana. And when you turn it face up, you discard your hand and draw 3 cards, which is drawing conclusions appropriately so to Bedlam Reveler, which is a card I actually run in the Bud Magic Cube. I think a lot of people have felt that Bedlam Reveler has not aged well because you need so many instants and sorceries in your yard before it has an appealing mana cost. But I found that to be kind of really fun in my cube. It is awful early, right? Which is where this thing has a huge edge on it. Because
right.
This, you can just, if it's on turn 2, you just play it. And you're pretty darn happy to do that. And if you draw it super late, you're now looking at 4 mana to flip it at the least, right? 3 mana to play it face down and that red mana to turn it face up. Which is certainly a much lower ceiling than the ceiling on Bedlam Reveler, which is just red-red. Discard your hand, make a 3-4 prowess, which is a lot better body, and draw cards.
Yeah, I mean, but we're saying, it's sort of a best case scenario that this is 4 mana for a 2/1 prowess haste, draw 3 cards, but that's not ridiculous to say because the best case scenario is it's just an efficient 2-drop.
Yeah, what this basically does, I think this is like a much more even-keeled Bedlam Reveler.
Sure.
Bedlam Reveler, awful early and can be like kind of utterly broken late, right? Like I have definitely seen games get completely turned around by a 2-mana Bedlam Reveler when a person was hellbent. They draw 3 cards and have a huge threat in play and the game is just completely radically changed. The draw 3 cards, this is almost closer to like a Rixmadi Reveler, honestly. Like this is like a Rixmadi Reveler for the Bun Magic Cube, where the front side is closer to playable than Rixmadi Revelers in the Bun Magic Cube, and the sort of 4-mana mode here, as opposed to the spectacle cost being Disguise and Flip Up, has actually the same payoff as Rixmadi Reveler, but easier to enable in a cube like this where you can fill your graveyard with instant sorceries. And then you're left with a haste creature, which I think is kind of cool. Like, you're going to draw 3 cards and maybe still have mana left over to start, you know, playing spells and attack with a 3-2 or a 4-3 right away, which pretty spicy. This will be my only Disguise or Morph card in my cube. I do have 2 cards currently that manifest cards in my cube, and I don't love having those alongside each other, though, to be honest, I kind of don't expect this would ever end up in a deck with those 2 cards, which are Primordial Mist and Whisperwood Elemental. So that's a concern for me, and I do think it's a bummer that if anyone plays a Disguise card, everyone's going to know, okay, it's Fugitive Codebreaker. Or if they don't know the cube, they'll say, hey, what's that card? And everyone's going to go, it's Fugitive Codebreaker.
You're
going
to be like, oh, should I tell you? And it's like,
I will 100% tell people, for sure. Like, if they don't know the cube that well, I'll just let them know. So I still maintain that, like, mechanically, the secret information of Morph or Disguise in this case is often not a huge deal. It was a bigger deal in previous sets where a lot of cards had like rattlesnake abilities when they hit your opponent, like not knowing what it was and not knowing whether you cared about blocking it or not mattered when if it hit you, you were going to discard cards or your opponent was going to, you know, draw cards or something. Here, you know, you're going to know what it is. And if you want to keep it from flipping, you're going to have to pay a pretty overtaxed removal spell on it, which is something. So yeah, I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot. We'll see. I don't think people are going to be able to guess the card I'm most excited about from the set because some other arguments I've made already for other cards I'm not playing, you could maybe arguably make against this one, but the card I'm most excited about, and it's by a pretty strong margin, this is the one that I don't expect to cut anytime soon, is No More Lies. It's white and a blue for an instant. Counter target spell unless its controller pays 3. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it into its owner's graveyard. Mana leak but exiles for blue and white.
But if you exile stuff, then you can't do more stuff later.
Well, I that's not what I was referring to. I was referring to the fact that I wasn't going to play a second Thraben Inspector, and now I am going to play a second Mana Leak with a slight upgrade. But this actually goes back to a thing we talked about on a episode maybe a month back, which was about having gold cards that are designed to be just payoffs, right? Like, this is not going to be an appealing card that you're going to, like, have first picked, you know, three blue cards and then pick four, be like, ooh, no more lies, I'm doing blue-white, right? It is not going to be a pull into that color combination. What it will be is a little treat, a little payoff for you. If you identify the open color pair, you will get this late, you will wheel it, and that is what I want. I love two mana counter spells. I am frankly kind of running all of the ones that I think are viable in my environment. I've thought about a couple of ones like Make Disappear, which I think are kind of close, but not quite there. This is another very playable two mana counter spell, just as another mana leak variant. And the exile, I think, is actually a pretty sizable upside here. There are a lot of things I care about the graveyard in my cube. Some of the biggest threats are things like Uro and Kroxa, and exiling it matters a lot. Even just exiling a spell so your opponent can't, you know, hit it with Snapcaster Mage, or so it cuts away from the card types in graveyard for their Delirium or their Tarmogoyf or something. I think it's a pretty sizable upgrade. So I'm really excited to have this as just a little treat for the control player in blue-white. It will join Supreme Verdict, which is, I think, in a very similar space, right? It's just Wrath of God, but a little better. Ah, I have a second non-counterable spell, I just realized. It's Supreme Verdict.
I can't believe you would do this.
Wow, there we go. Look at me,
you're a monster.
I'm a nothing but a pile of inconsistencies and conflict. So anyway, I'm excited about No More Lies. I think it's a perfect card for my cube, and I just wish we'd get something like this. I mean, actually, I do love Drown in the Lock in blue-black for the exact same reasons. I would love another Drown in the Lock-style card that was a payoff for control decks in blue-black as well, but I'll take the blue-white ones when I get them. That's the Bun Magic Cube.
Wow. Should we talk about the regular cube?
We should. Did you see the email? Every once in a while when you have a public persona or a podcast or something, you get an email that just like shakes you to your core. And I got an email from somebody that, I think you get all the emails now too, which said like...
I did not see the email. I will look for
it. You might have seen it. Maybe it didn't shake you to your core. This person was just like, hey, I love the show. I've been listening, listened to a bunch of episodes over the past like month when I've gotten to know it. I really like it. Just FYI, for like 8 or 10 episodes, when you kept saying regular cube, I thought you meant the Magic Online cube. So maybe it'd be good to clarify that in every future episode.
That's funny. Yeah.
And you know that one person that emailed about it, there's going to be a dozen other people that have been thinking the exact same thing and have never emailed. So yeah, that's a real core bone-shaking email to get.
We appreciate you letting us know. And I think about every 8 episodes, so that stacks up.
All by way of saying, please give us a description of the regular cube and reflect further on your name choice, which has caused us nothing
but
grief.
So this is a perfectly normal cube. It's an ordinary cube that's doing nothing wrong. It's not like the Magic Online cube. It plays a lot more like a master set. It feels a lot like sort of a powered up limited format where most of the cards are kind of the power level of a good tier uncommon or that cool rare that maybe didn't really make it in any constructed format but was kind of cool to draft. So it does play a lot like limited. It plays the board. You're playing creatures. You're trying to curve out and playing interactive spells. Because of that, there are always tons and tons of cards that could be reasonable includes in this cube. You know, all of the role players that are just the cool removal spell with set mechanic could be reasonable here. But I'm not necessarily trying to make huge changes just for the sake of changes. So I'm only really looking at a couple cards that really are leaning into some particular changes I've been trying to make to the environment or are something a little bit novel. The first of which is Curious Inquiry. This is 1 blue for an enchantment aura. It enchants a creature that gets +1/+1, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, investigate. I'm curious what you think about this, Andy. We've talked about how in this environment we've been trying to give blue a little bit more of an identity, and one of the ways we've done that is added a couple different iterations of these types of curiosity-style effects. This is notable in that it does give the creature +1/+1, like Curious Obsession. It doesn't have the same downside that forces it to attack every turn, which is a downside, but if you're not in that situation, maybe you're kind of just not in great shape anyway, so it's not that big a deal. The obvious power downshift here is that you then do have to pay 2 mana to actually cash in and get those cards. So I don't know, I'm interested in trying it out, maybe without even cutting another one of those cards, just up the density of these effects, but seeing how it plays.
Yeah, I think this is definitely worth a test. I think power and toughness matters so much in this cube that
it really does.
This is probably better than
Curiosity, I think.
Yeah, just better than like normal Curiosity and also Keen Sense, which is the color shift of Curiosity in green. in the most recent draft of this cube, the second most recent draft of this cube, there was somebody that put together what I hear was a pretty awesome mono blue tempo deck on the back of these kind of effects.
Yeah, so part of the idea here, the sort of plans drawn up by the cube designer that usually don't necessarily pan out, was to make this sort of a blue-green archetype. So there's a couple gold cards that signal this as well. Somebody ended up drafting mostly blue with a splash of black, a very light black splash for one or two ninjas with a lot of these curiosity effects, and it played pretty well. They also had a cool transformative sideboard siding into blue-white into a slightly more aggressive, less controlling version of the deck. But yeah, so I think that's a little bit, giving me a little bit of hope that this is there, and that kind of makes me more excited about having another option for these effects.
Yeah, I love it, just putting it in and trying it. I think it's better than Curiosity, worse than Curious Obsession, but definitely worth a test to see how it plays out.
Great. I'm now going to rotate my laptop 90 degrees and read push to pull, or push and pull. How are we doing these? There's always a theme.
I think it's and.
Push and pull. That makes a lot more sense.
Two is the aftermath cards.
Push is one and a hybrid white or black for a sorcery. Destroy target tapped creature. I think that this, you know, having hybrid removal spells just opens up a lot of space in the environment where these are kinds of the unexciting things that every deck wants some number of. So I think having that just be a hybrid card makes the environment a little bit more flexible, but it also has the other tiny card next to it, Pull, which is 4, hybrid red-black, to put up to 2 target creature cards from a single graveyard onto the battlefield. Under your control, they gain haste until end of turn and sacrifice them at the beginning of the next end step. We've talked about how I really enjoy the hybrid split cards from one of the last visits to Ravnica that have a hybrid spell on one side and then a bigger gold spell on the next, which just gives you a lot of flexibility in the draft to do these kinds of light splashes. These do something sort of similar where I think any deck that is black or white is going to be pretty happy to play push, and then if you're playing black or red, I don't think you're ever going to play this in a mono red deck, but maybe if you have a couple sources of white or black, having that kind of cool thing that you can close a game out with, potentially re-trigger a bunch of ETBs, is going to be a pretty cool splashy effect.
Yeah, I knew you were going to play at least one of these cards. These are right up your alley, these split hybrid cards, and I like this one well enough. I think it kind of reminds me a little bit of Bedeck Bedazzle, where one side is a removal spell. This is like a kind of an even trade-off, right? The fact that it's a sorcery instead of an instant is a clear downgrade, but also only being one and a black or white as opposed to double devotion makes it much more castable. So, yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense in the regular cube.
And this might be the point where Bedeck Bedazzle finally gets cut, just because Bedazzle is really not much of a card. It destroys the land and does 2 damage, which I've seen cast a handful of times, but
Pull is definitely going to be more relevant.
It'll pull you into casting that spell a little bit more.
I mean, Pull is going to be very swingy, I think. There's going to be some games that are just going to immediately be ended by Pull.
A little bit of a concern that might be too much, because there just aren't a lot of things that even cost 6 mana in the environment, so
I can't decide. It might be just kind of cool to have games in that way a little bit, though.
We'll find out.
Is it fun? We'll find out.
Another one of these I'm interested in is Cease and Desist. It's an instant for 1 and a green-black. Exile 2 target cards from a single graveyard. Target player gains 2 life and draws a card. And on the other side is Desist, 4, green-white. Destroy all artifacts and enchantments at sorcery speed. Again, I'm not totally sure how this is going to pan out, but an instant speed cantrip that gives you some graveyard interaction is going to be pretty relevant. And again, it's a card that I like at hybrid because it's just easy to include. It's going to be functional in sideboards. And then there aren't a ton of sweepers in the format, so I'm actually a little bit curious how a sweeper specifically for artifacts and enchantments might play out.
You didn't ask, I gotta be honest, I don't like this one anywhere near as much.
Yeah.
These both feel like sideboard effects, and Desist especially feels like it punishes a deck that already is definitely not overperforming. You know, like the artifact deck is a cool thing you can do, but has not historically been like an overtly powerful thing you can do. And the idea now that I can just sideboard into 6 mana, your deck scoops, feels kind of bad. And I can't imagine really being happy to main deck Cease either.
That's fair. I mean, between Flotsam and Jetsam, Fuss and Bother, Hustle and Bustle, are any of those 3, do you think, more appealing in this environment?
I like that you have to play at least 2. You're like, what's the next one I'm going to play? Because I love these cards so much. Let me look at these real quick.
I should say also, Scryfall does the great thing where you just search for, you know, set MKM is split. It rotates them all very nicely. I'm looking at these cards in my own little app that I made, which doesn't handle sideways cards as well. That's on me.
Fuss and Bother is one that feels most regular cube to me. The fuss side is two and a red or white, so three mana to put a plus one counter on each attacking creature you control. I guess the fact that it doesn't target feels maybe like a
it doesn't
nombo
target,
with the
so
heroic
things. It
goes
things. Against heroic theme. There was also,
but you do a plus one counter thing going on as well.
Also true. There was also a similar card.
Depose Deploy, right? That makes Thopters?
No, just a three white sorcery that pumped your team and gave it vigilance that people weren't super happy with that card.
Didn't
it was
that
a little bit swingy.
Also give it Indestructible if you cast it on your main phase?
I think so. Something
is,
like that.
The addendum card from...
Correct.
Whatchamadoodad.
Exactly, Whatchamadoodad. Okay, maybe we'll put Fuss and Bother on this list.
Hustle and Bustle definitely doesn't feel right to me. I mean, it's kind of nice that the Hustle side does trigger heroic stuff, but Bustle, both being an overrun, which is even swingier than
yes.
Pull, and also having
not
this thing
cool
about turning things face up, which
I
you don't
re-trigger
really
a bunch of neat ETBs.
Yeah.
I guess we're just left with Push and Pull and Fuss and Bother. The last thing I'll shout out, we talked about this a lot already, but I'm also interested in the Surveil lands. There aren't fetch lands aside from a bunch of Prismatic Vistas in this environment, so you are just going to end up fetching. So you are just going to be playing these like temples. That's very much where I was thinking about them, but there are a fair number of temples here. I think I'd be happy just to swap those out and maybe rethink a little bit of some of the other sets of dual lands and see where that makes the most sense.
Yeah, they're definitely more appealing than temples, and temples are already... not that appealing, I think, in the regular cube, to be frank.
Yeah.
We had a roto draft recently where I had just safely staked out a color combination. I could have as many fixing lands as I wanted, and I was like, I will not take... If you gave it to me for free, I would not play the temple in my colors because I think it is bad enough. So I would have played the Surveil land, though, I think, in that same spot. I think the slight edge, I think, is probably worth it. Also, to be fair, in that deck, I learned that I think I actually... in hindsight, after playing all the games, would have rather have had the temple compared to the Ravnica Bounce land. Pound for pound, I think.
Specifically because turn one was so important, or turn two, rather.
Yeah, pound for pound, I think the bounce lands are a lot better in your queue, but I'm actually take them very highly in a lot of decks, which I don't for any of the temples. But in the specific deck I had the two drop slot was so important for me that I did not want to take turn two off. I wanted turn two to be on curve. I didn't have that many one drops, and so I had opening hands with the stupid bounce land and was like, I regret all my decisions, so... it's probably wrong to not play the temple in the first place, but what are you going to do?
Play more temples, I guess.
Wrong. I'll play Surveil lands.
Okay, great. So that's all I've got for the regular cube. Is there anything else? You mentioned that
so
some other things.
So not a single Ravnica Clue Edition card.
Not a single one.
Not a Boros Strike Captain or an Ecstatic Electromancer or a Furious Spine Splitter.
I feel like all of these cards, they scan the same. They have the same sort of musical lilt to the name of the cards.
Ordrun Mentor, that one doesn't have the same sort of cadence necessarily. I don't, all these, especially the uncommon hybrid cards, a lot of them felt like they were perfect power level for the regular cube, and you do love hybrid cards a lot, so I kind of expected you to be into some of these, but...
okay, that's a good point. I do love hybrid cards. None of them really stood out to me, but I will, with that hybrid mindset, give them another look. How about that?
I think the one that jumps out to me the most is Ecstatic Electromancer, which is the one I'll read the rules text for, and then you can obviously do your own little thinking on your own time, or just say, you know, shove off, Andy. I'll play my own cards. You do you. This is a one and a two blue-red, so, you know, one blue-blue, one red-red, or one blue-red. For a creature goblin wizard, it's a 2/3 with prowess, and when it enters the battlefield or attacks, you may discard a card if you do draw a card. You love the rummaging ability on creatures.
I do love rummaging. I do like
this
prowess.
This is such a clean little prowess
like
body. It's hybrid. It's a goblin wizard. It feels like it's got a lot going on here.
That's all pretty reasonable. I mean, but there already is a spell with exactly the same hybrid mana cost, which just, you know, aesthetically, that's going to bother me.
What is that one?
Saheeli.
Yeah, Saheeli does unique things, for sure.
This is not actually important, but at some point, you know, we get to just be picky.
Scuttling Sentinel also could be kind of cool for that Curious Obsession deck, maybe. Anyway... I thought these cards would appeal to you. Maybe I'm wrong. This is where you get to be, like you said, be very picky.
Yeah, I mean, similarly, it's like I think that a lot of these cards would play just fine, but they're not necessarily screaming to me, you know, this is worth seeking out new cards and making changes for the sake of making changes.
Sure. All right, I got two little bangers here for the Degenerate Micro Cube. This is my ultra unfair cube that is all about degenerate combos and turn one wins and answers to turn one wins, where you draft a 15 card deck. So you end up building a really small deck. You start with almost half your deck in your opening hand, which means you can build around very specific AB combos or very specific cards and see them very reliably. The two cards I'm interested in for this cube are, one, Pick Your Poison. This is a single green mana for a sorcery. Choose one. Each opponent sacrifices an artifact. Each opponent sacrifices an enchantment. Each opponent sacrifices a creature with flying.
Oh, that kills Merit Lage. That seems important.
Yeah, so Pick Your Poison here is great. Edicts are really good here because a lot of the threats are otherwise non-interactive. We could have a whole long conversation about how I think in the first version of this cube went too far on the edict effects and effectively nullified all of the value of the cards being non-interactive threats in the first place. But I've corrected that, and the sacrifice a creature with flying, like you said, it hits Merit Lage, it hits a lot of other really big threats, your Sphinx of the Steel Wind, your Triplicate Titan, though you're not all that better off once they sacrifice a Triplicate Titan. A little better off,
I guess. You gotta start somewhere.
That, and also the same goes for artifacts and enchantments. You know, there are a lot of really important artifacts and enchantments in the cube, especially artifacts, and so this to me feels like a very main deckable answer. I feel like most decks are going to have an artifact or an enchantment or a creature with flying that you care about. And at only one mana, it's really efficient, so you can afford to have it taxed a couple times and still be able to cast it. I also think this card is just kind of broken for Commander. Like, it's one mana, 3-for-1 in Commander a lot of the time, so you just get everyone to sacrifice their Soul Rings or their, you know, Signets or whatever on, like, turn 2 or 3.
Okay,
which seems
that.
Quite good. That doesn't apply here, but yeah, Pick Your Poison I think is quite good for the Degenerate Micro Cube.
I only have one small quibble, which it's called Pick Your Poison, but
they don't get to
pick their poison.
Pick the poison you will use.
I picked your poison. Have poison.
Here, some poison. The second card I'm interested in is Doorkeeper Thrall. 1 and a white for a 1/2 creature Thrall with flash and flying, and it has the ability, artifacts and creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. I already play Hushbringer in this cube. It is both a very potent hate bear against all of the creatures with powerful enter the battlefield abilities, of which there are many. The flash deck is one of the best combo decks where you just flash in a World Spine Worm or a Triplicate Titan or whatever. The fact that this only cares about entering the battlefield does make a lot of those things worse, but the fact that it has flash is cool. There's also a proactive deck that plays these cards, which is the Phyrexian Dreadnought deck, where you can just play this and nullify the downside on your own Phyrexian Dreadnought. So I think this is probably going to get the test alongside Hushbringer for a little while. I think Hushbringer is still probably the best one for the cube because it also stops the stuff things leaving the battlefield. And this is the next best one. There's other ones that have been printed before, like Tecatli Honor Guard and stuff, but I think this is better than those, and so worth giving a shot in the old Degenerate Micro Cube. That's it. Two cards. That's actually quite a few for the Degenerate. Most sets don't have anything for it, so yeah. Having two is something.
I was a little surprised. Should we talk about the Turbo Cube?
We have to talk about the Turbo Cube, Anthony. This is the most exciting thing. You see, I only have 8 cards? 6 cards? What'd you say?
I only have 6 cards.
That's a shock to me. Go ahead. Start describing the cube while I start looking up all the cards that you're not running.
In contrast to my regular cube, this is not a normal cube. In this environment, all spells and activated abilities cost 2 generic mana less, which means you get to just turn a bunch of junk cards into very broken things. The environment is very combo-y, especially focused on artifacts and things like that. It's a weird, weird cube, but we've been playing it more often, and they just keep printing more cards that are relevant for it. In particular, this set has a lot of cards that could be really, really powerful here because so many things just investigate and create clues. So, you know, if you imagine here's an effect that would cost 4 mana in a normal set, in this set maybe it costs 3 and then also creates a clue. So it comes out to something that's sort of similar power level in just the way the cards function normally, but you get the discount twice when it's split across over those two effects, so things end up just being pretty, pretty busted. Because there's that artifact theme, there's also just a lot of other cards that care about artifacts, which means there are more payoff cards as well. First card I want to talk about is Cerebral Confiscation. So we also talked a couple episodes back about some updates we've made to this cube that are trying to give black a little bit more of an identity focus on discard, and I'm always interested in just mind rots that are a little bit more functional here. This is 2 and a black for a sorcery that says choose one, target opponent discards 2 cards, or target opponent reveals their hand, you choose a non-land card from it, and that player discards that card. This actually seems potentially interesting at a lot of different power levels and contexts. The flexibility of either a mind rot if they have 2 cards left in hand or just a few cards left in hand, or a more thought seize type effect if you are trying to get something pretty specific, is pretty powerful. In the Turbo Cube, this just costs 1 mana, so it is a choice between 1 mana mind rot or thought seize. And I think that flexibility is going to be very relevant. We talked about cards like Waste Not and other things that just care about the number, raw number of cards your opponent is discarding. So having that choice of being able to, depending on the context, either get rid of a critical combo piece or lean into your synergies and force more discard seems like it's just one of the most relevant mind rot type effects there have been printed. Moving on to blue, Forensic Gadgeteer. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 creature. It's a Vedalken Artificer Detective. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, investigate, and activated abilities of artifacts you control cost 1 less to activate. This effect can't reduce mana in the cost to less than 1 mana. That second part is maybe not super super relevant, and I have questions about how that actually works. What's important here is that this is a 1 mana creature that whenever you cast an artifact spell, you draw a card with other potential upside, because maybe you just need a bunch of artifacts in play to kill somebody with your Nettle Cyst or something like that. So this also can just do a ton. I think this is going to be a pretty insane card advantage engine in decks that just can play a ton of actually free artifacts.
Yeah, this card's messed up in the best possible way. This is the kind of card that's really fun to play broken in the Turbo Cube, and definitely one of the ones I thought was a slam dunk inclusion. Until maybe it proves to be too good, we'll find out.
I could definitely see cutting this card if it just ends up being, well, yeah, very oppressive. How does that actual, that cost reduction work? So it discounts things by additional one, which is great, that makes sense. But I'm trying to think, actually, does anything actually cost 3 to activate? Maybe this is just not relevant. Does it apply in timestamp order that you get the first two?
Lithiform Engine has activated abilities right, that cost okay. more than cost 3 or more.
So can this still not reduce things to less than 1? Like, you don't get to choose the order the abilities apply in. Is that right?
Judge!
We read some cards, but we got confused. How do they work? We don't know. Oh, we're in trouble and there's only one person we can call. Judge Bones!
Who?
Judge Bones!
All rise for the Honorable Judge Bones.
Hello, players. Luckily, that is not right. Whenever you have multiple cost reductions applying to the same cost, you do get to choose their order. So in this case, by choosing to apply Gadgeteer's Asterisk Reduction first and the Turbo Emblem second, you can reduce a cost of 3 to 0. Or if for some reason you wanted to pay mana, like spending a certain color, for example, you could also make 3 cost 1. Nice.
I do not know.
I will definitely, before we do a draft with this card, make sure I understand that interaction.
Good. That is good and cool.
Next up, this is actually one I'm pretty excited about, even though it's a little bit more basic. Moving on into red, Torch the Witness. This is X and a red for a sorcery. Torch the Witness deals twice X damage to target creature. If excess damage is dealt to a creature this way, investigate. Even though this cube is pretty, you know, combo-y and there's lots of huge splashy things you can do, there's a lot of these dinky, you know, 2 and a red, deal 4 damage to a creature, kind of draft chaff cards that end up being pretty relevant. It's really important to have one or two of these type effects if you do end up against a Hate Bears deck or something like that, or you want to stop somebody's combo. This is just, I think, a much better version of a lot of these kinds of effects in terms of just like a burn spell, in that you do get a discount of 2 on that X that you're paying, so it's going to be an effective removal spell, and it pays for itself in terms of the card by giving you a clue token, and all of the synergy on top of that happens. So I think this is just going to be one of the more, like, a burn spell you're actually going to be more excited to include in your deck than begrudgingly have one or two of.
Yeah, I think this card is cool. The fact that it's a sorcery is a big cost, because so many times your opponent will play a really important creature and then do a bunch of disgusting things with it before even passing the turn. I still think it's worth playing, though, because cantripping removal is just very good. And
yeah,
even at just the base cost, 4 damage is going to kill almost anything you care
it'll
about
kill
in this
your
cube.
Size, although then it doesn't give you back the card, but it'll kill your Monastery
it'll
Mentors.
Kill pretty much everything you care
pretty
about
much.
While drawing a card, and have the option to kill things that maybe are bigger, or maybe, you know, you can't draw a card if you're killing a Sai or something. I think it's definitely worth it for sure.
Next up, Demand Answers. This is 1 and a red for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice an artifact or discard a card. Draw 2 cards. So this is just a slightly powered up Thrill of Possibilities that also lets you turn a lot of your artifacts into basically just a new card. This is the one cube that I'm playing where I am kind of like power maxing. Like, I will choose the more powerful option aside from things that are actively not making things fun. More importantly than that, I think that there are just a lot of artifacts that you do want to get into your graveyard or do want to sacrifice for value. So I think this is just going to play a lot more interesting than Thrill of Possibility.
Yep, I think it's cool. Not broken, but a role player that I'd be happy to put in my deck almost all the time.
Excellent. Red's really getting a lot of cards from this set. Next up, we've got Crime Novelist. 2 and a red for a 1/3 creature, a goblin bard. Whenever you sacrifice an artifact, ding, 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 put a 1/1 counter on Crime Novelist and add red mana to your mana pool.
Yup.
This is a little bit more of a build around, but yup. The ceiling on this, actually being able to just produce a lot of red mana from your artifact sacrifice effects, is potentially insane. This is a card I'm honestly just curious to see what people do with. I
think it's sick. I love it.
Have a perfect handle on how much artifact you're going to be able to sacrifice, how quickly, but I bet it's going to be a fair amount.
Plus,
can turn into a reasonable threat on its own as well.
Yeah, it's probably going to be kind of Bergy-esque, but I'm not sure.
It's not quite as good. It's nowhere near as good as Bergy. Like, you have to focus on it more. Then again, yeah, there will definitely be situations where this will do more than Bergy.
Yeah, the thing about Bergy is, like, Bergy's good, but so oftentimes what you run into is just, okay, made a bunch of mana, what to do with the mana,
though? What do I do?
I mean, it is true. I've made the case before that I think that mana is actually more often the bottleneck in this cube than you would expect, even though the whole shtick is that you are cost reduced on mana. It does actually often end up being the thing that keeps you from, you know, going off this turn or next turn, and a turn is a big difference in this cube. So yeah, I don't think it's gonna be broken, you know, famous last words, but really cool build around and a big payoff for being in the artifact deck.
And the last card I have, also in red but in a slightly different vein, is Vengeful Tracker. This is 1 in a red for a 2/2 creature human detective. Whenever an opponent sacrifices an artifact, Vengeful Tracker deals 2 damage to them. So if somebody's doing the rude thing,
please,
with Crime Novelist, you're at least going to deal them a bunch of damage on the way out, on the way in, on the way somewhere.
I like all those inclusions.
Excellent.
I've also identified some more.
Okay, hit me.
All right, in color order, other cards I think are really interesting. Armored with Proof, 2 and a white for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, investigate twice. Clues you control are equipment in addition to their other types, and have equipped creature gets +2/+0 and equip 2.
Oh, I did look at this card and then I forgot about it.
So in this cube, 1 white mana to make 2 clues, which I think oftentimes will just draw you 2 cards, but sometimes will actually just turn those clues into equipment to bash your opponent with and then draw some cards later on in second main phase or something, and actually just make this be +4/+0 to your hasty creature or something, which is a boon to the aggressive decks. Not crazy on any axis, but I think a very cool card that does a lot here in a really interesting way.
Yeah, that's definitely needs to get a try.
Next up, Prof's Eidetic Memory. 1 and a blue for a legendary enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card. You have no maximum hand size. At the beginning of combat on your turn, if you've drawn more than one card this turn, which you always will have done, put X +1/+1 counters on target creature you control, where X is the number of cards you've drawn this turn, -1. So 1 blue mana replaces itself, and then maximum hand size thing, probably never going to matter. Your spells are so easy to get out of your hand, that's kind of irrelevant. What will matter is putting 5, 6, 8 +1/+1 counters on a creature at the beginning of combat on your turn, which I also love this because it's a different thing than the blue decks are doing. Like, the red decks have a lot of ways to pile a bunch of power and toughness on the board and, you know, build things up really quickly, but blue decks are often doing more dirtily things where they're generating card advantage, making a bunch of tokens. This just says, all right, now this Thopter's a 9/9. Deal with that, which I think is really cool and totally worth playing around.
Interesting. I looked at this card and definitely thought, you know, because the game is so quickly, a lot of these cards that trigger at the beginning of your, like, trigger once per turn, just don't do that much. But there are definitely games where you're just like, yeah, I drew 8 cards before I moved out of my main phase.
I think that's like, I think the normal number of cards you draw on the first turn of the game is probably 5 or 7 in this cube.
Could be 12.
That's definitely possible. And even if this card was just 1 blue mana, draw a card, put 7 +1/+1 counters on a creature at the beginning of combat, I think it'd be very cool. And the fact that if the game goes on any longer, you get to do even more stuff with it, I think it's pretty sick.
All right, you're talking me into it.
I'm sure you thought of the next one. You probably decided it was too broken, but we have to mention Follow the Bodies. 2 in blue for a sorcery. Investigate Gravestorm.
Gravestorm.
Gravestorm says, when you cast this spell, copy it for each permanent put into a graveyard from the battlefield this turn. Not just your graveyard, any graveyard. And investigate just means draw a card, which is very good. This also triggers on token permanence. So if you've done prior investigating on the turn and then you cast Follow the Bodies, you're just going to draw even more cards. I think it's very likely this is just completely cracked and broken.
There's two challenges here. One is this is probably completely cracked
and broken.
The other is that Gravestorm is a tricky mechanic, especially just with so much going on. Lots of like permanents that you're cycling, things like that. That we played, what is it called? Bitter Ordeal, the one other Gravestorm card, and it was just confusing. But I might put Bitter Ordeal back in.
If I were you, I would have to try this card for at least a couple drafts and at least see it be as broken as I think maybe
just
it could
watch.
Be. It's the kind of power I like because it's just an enabler. So like your deck still has to do something else to win, right? It's just giving you a huge amount of power. Like, is this better than Yawgmoth's Will? I don't think so. I think it's pretty similar.
That's a good framing, yeah.
And the idea that you could combine this with something like Armed with Proof and just make a bunch
of
clues.
Or Yawgmoth's Will? I guess it actually doesn't work that well with Yawgmoth's Will. Because that means things don't actually die, so you don't trigger Gravestorm.
Well, you'd have to just sacrifice all your stuff first,
mm-hmm.
then cast Follow the Bodies, then cast Yawgmoth's Will, then cast Follow the Bodies again.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the possibility to maybe combine this with Arm with Proof or something and just like have 20 equipments you stick on a Thopter and just kill them with. I think it's... I wouldn't be able to resist trying it at least once. Also because Gravestorm is so drippingly cool. So, gotta at least mention that one, even though I'm sure you've considered it and probably decided it is too good. This next one, I think I will be able to talk you into including. I think it's very cool in a very subtle way. They went this way. 2 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for a basic land card. Put it onto the battlefield tapped. Then shuffle and investigate.
It's really hard for me to get excited about this card because it's not Harrow.
Harrow is better, but Harrow doesn't replace itself.
That is true.
Landfall is a big theme in green, and if you add some other cards we've been talking about in the playgroup, like a Lotus Cobra, Tireless Provisioner, and some other cards like that, it will be even more of a theme. And this, in many cases, will just, like, it's not hard to build your deck around this being a mana-positive cantrip, which are, of course, the best kinds of cards to have here.
Okay.
But it does require you to do that. It requires you to, like, have actually done it. But, you know, if you have a Tireless Tracker and a Lotus Cobra in play, this card is absolutely cracked.
Okay, that's fair. There's probably some similar Rampant Growth type effects that this is less, or this is more interesting than.
Yeah, in general, I am also, like, a little bit skeptical of anything that cares about basic lands because I will often have so few in my deck, though green is the color I'll have the most in for sure.
Right, right.
Because of the land matter stuff, but I think that card for sure makes sense here. This last one I might not be able to sell you on, but Gravestone Strider is just another copy of Salvage Mana Worker. This is a 2-mana 1/3, and that just means 0-mana 1/3, that has the ability 1, add a mana of any color, activate once each turn. Which is the relevant ability here. The other one doesn't not matter. It's pay 2, exile Gravestone Strider from your graveyard, exile target card from a graveyard, which could totally come up. I think that's cool utility to have. More so, I really, really love the Salvage Mana Worker play patterns. It is very powerful, but I don't think broken. Certainly not compared to the eggs and stuff. Like, there are cards in here that are, by choice, incredibly broken, just cantripping rituals that are just utterly cracked. These cards never replacing themselves means that they are just purely... It's investing in ramp, right? This is the same as, like, a mana rock. But the play pattern of being able to use that mana on the turn you play it to, like, continue developing your board or whatever, and then, as you've pointed out, have that mana up to also counter a spell or use an instant on your opponent's turn, I think is huge. I love Salvage Mana Worker. I think there's even maybe one more that is also a fixed version of... it's a fixed version of Prismite, which in this cube would allow you to make infinite mana because it doesn't say activate only once each turn.
Right.
I personally would love to see as many of these as they print in this cube, within reason.
Because we've talked about this when they've printed multiples of these cards that in this context would be functionally identical. This one does have another ability. So that's
another
my
point of toughness. Who does that matter?
Yeah, not really. So the question is, to me, just do you actually want more of this effect? Because I think Salvage Mana Worker, he's just a little guy. He's going to work to make mana for you.
He does have cuter art. It's true.
It's clear what he does. This guy he's made gravestones. He's in a mausoleum. It's like, what are you going to do for me, guy? I don't know.
The same thing Mana Gorger, or not Mana Gorger, not that one at all. The same thing Salvage Mana Worker should
do. If you think that just like having more of that effect makes sense, then I could be talked into it.
I love that effect. I think it is like a really healthy... broken, but not broken to have more of. Like, I wouldn't genuinely advocate for putting more eggs in at this point, I don't think, because...
I would put in 2 dozen more eggs.
I mean...
they come in dozens.
You could just add... let's not talk about all the things you could add at this point. I don't get too distracted, but this is the kind of effect I found I really like, and I don't think it's like... Like, I think it's also the kind of effect that you will often just pass for another good card that is not broken, right? Like... the red deck will probably take a Devilish Valet over this. The white deck will take some of the best hate berries over this. I think the green deck would take a Tireless Tracker or a Fastbond over this. Like, it's not just another piece of power that you were just never supposed to pass, but it's a really powerful effect that I think is fun to play with here.
All right.
My two cents.
I will give it some thought.
Tons of bangers in this set for the Turbo Cube, and I've had Turbo Cube in my mind since we drafted it last. It's just, sometimes that thing just weasels its way in there, and we talked about the whole black discard package.
Really breaks your brain.
Just, I want to draft it more, and again, and further, so.
We can't, we have to draft other cubes. We have so many cubes.
Truly, truly blessed. Well, so much for two short episodes. I got a lot of editing to do before I leave for Europe. But I hope you enjoyed this set review. A good time to maybe say if you want to give us 5 stars on your platform of choice. You know, rate us on Spotify, rate us on iTunes, and it really does help. I'm talking right now to some guests I want to have on the show, and you know, for people that don't know us already, it's really nice to be able to like have a established presence with a bunch of good reviews so people know they're not just like coming on some weird show that nobody listens to. So helps out to do that. Costs you nothing, and it's a really good way to help the show. Anything else to close on here, Anthony?
Are you going
to
play any Magic in Europe?
I don't think so.
Bring some decks with you? Play some Battle Box in the airport?
I did ping some of our friends in Europe, but as small as Europe is, you know, my closest friends are in like Denmark and Austria and, you know, places that are not super convenient to where I'm going to be,
Denmark's
which is Italy and Switzerland.
On the other side.
So, a couple people in the Netherlands too. So anyway, no, I don't think I'm playing any Magic, but I will be eating good food and walking 1,000 miles a day.
I love half of that.
This is my plan. And on that bombshell, that concludes this episode of Lucky Paper Radio. Thank you for tuning in. All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the Magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. This podcast was produced by Anthony and I, thinking really hard about Magic cards and then speaking into microphones about it for 2.5 hours straight. Thank you for accommodating this marathon recording session, Anthony, so that I can go on vacation.
Absolutely. Enjoy your vacation.
What do you want from Switzerland? You've been to Switzerland many times. What do you want us to bring back for you? Some sort of weird little sausage?
Ooh, yeah, they got those.
A funky special kind of cheese?
Oh, they do have good cheese. You don't want to be smuggling back cheese. That's...
You don't have to smuggle it back. You can just bring it back.
You don't want to bring it back. Just chocolate.
Okay, chocolate.